Welcome back to Arts About.
Show about art that's a work of art in itself, Mark. A show about art.
Yes, John. No, look, I still haven't seen anything worth talking about yet. Soon to come.
I do hope so. That's great. You are listening to Arts About, which is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio. You're listening to me, Sally Bailey, along with cultural sounding board and artist-in-residence John Baird and the futuristically inclined Mark Stewart, although I'm not so sure it's futuristic today.
Well, if death is the future, then yes. We're
talking. It's the future for all of us, I guess, isn't it? Brody's not here today, so I'm on the buzzers, or I should say the button, so if there are any boo-boos this week, it's my fault.
Where is Brody?
I do not know.
Did you look behind the curtain?
He is AWOL.
No. Not behind the curtain as usual.
No, he's not behind the curtain. I'm behind the curtain today as well as in front of it. Okay, so what are you going to talk to us about this week, John?
I want to talk about the inside the skin of things, namely buildings.
Oh, okay, good. That's always been a bit of a thing of yours, architecture, hasn't it?
Yeah, but also not only architecture, I think you can get inside the skin of paintings in certain circumstances.
Oh, the subtext.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not in women, no.
No, Mark, no. Not everything has to do with sex.
Well, it's under the skin anyway, it's not in the skin. I'm not talking about sex, John, I'm talking about humanity.
Ah, and is that what you'll be talking to us about this week?
Well, it's indirectly involved, but no, it's more about birth and death today.
Birth and death. Okay, fantastic. Well, I'm going to be talking to Latvian artist Brigita Stroda in the studio this week, and she's going to tell us about the Northern European tradition of crowns, her design and manufacture of them, and her pan-global experience as an Australian returning to her Baltic roots, returning to Australia. And while we get her in the studio, at the request of one of you, John or Mark, here are the easy beats with Friday on My Mind.
Thanks, Matt, Sally.
Yeah, did you like that, John?
I did.
Fantastic.
A bit tinny. There's no bass sound, is there?
Well, is that why you were singing along, Mark? Our next guest, Brigita Stroda, hails from Riga, the capital of Latvia, and the source, it is said, of the Amber Road, the ancient trade route stretching north-south from the Baltic through to the Black Sea, which began during the Ice Age and created what some would argue was the first pan-European market and possibly the precursor of the European Union itself. I've had to do a little history lesson for myself because it's a part of the world that I'm not really familiar with. And I discovered that Latvia, originally established as a republic in 1918, was forcibly incorporated into the Soviet Union after the Second World War, and it wasn't until the fabulously named Singing Revolution in 1987, calling for the emancipation of the country, that independence was eventually restored. And in 1994, Brigita Stroda returned there after a life in arts, lived here in Australia. Beginning with an education in set design and arts management, Brigita was involved in the early formation of the Melbourne Festival before she moved to France to manage a Latvian cultural centre in the Loire Valley. When independence occurred in Latvia, she was drawn back to her roots where she worked in the Centre for Contemporary Arts. She works, I think, still sometimes. She's smiling at me and nodding. And also the Latvian National Opera. And she's designed a singing bicycle and now she makes crowns as well. Good morning, Brigita Stroda. Welcome to Arts About.
Good morning, Sally. It's a pleasure to be here.
Did I get some of that right?
That was perfectly fine.
Fantastic. Brigita, when did your family come to Australia in the first place?
My parents separately left Latvia in the closing stages of the Second World War and ended up in displaced persons camps in Germany. When the displaced persons camps were closed up, they then went to wherever people would take the new immigrants, and some went to America. My parents separately came to Australia.
And so you've spent your whole life here. Were you born here?
I was born here, yes.
You were born
yes.
in Australia. Yeah. So you've had an arts background, you've studied the arts, and you have ended up being part of, I think, was what was probably quite a renaissance in Melbourne, which was the Spoleto Festival, I think it was called, in those days. And I think that, to my mind, that was the beginning of a real change in Melbourne arts. What was it like in those days, do you think?
Two of my most sort of powerful memories, one is having to hire a crane to lift a grand piano into Giancarlo Menotti's hotel room at the Windsor. He was finishing the last parts of his opera Goya to be shown for the Washington Opera. And the second thing was, for me personally, was that the opening event was Ken Russell's opera, Madame Butterfly, which was the first time that I saw opera performed as a piece of dramatic theatre that was all overpowering, incredibly intense, with a fantastic finale, which was a precursor to Hiroshima. And I had never seen that you could do that with opera, and that changed everything for me.
I would imagine seeing a Ken Russell opera would change everything for almost anybody that had actually seen a lot of opera too.
Absolutely.
What year was that?
84, okay. I think.
Wow.
Yeah, 83, 84.
And where was that? Was it at the Art Centre?
It was performed at the Art Centre.
Yes.
And the other incredible thing is that one of my jobs was to make the travel arrangements for a bunch of really sort of arrogant, egocentric sort of young upstarts who happened to be Jean-Yves Thibaudet, Stephen Isserles, a bunch of incredible up-and-coming young instrumentalists who are now at the peak of their careers throughout the world, and meeting them, very young, very driven, fantastically talented, herded by a guy called Scott McRenz, who seemed to be able to pick them from all over the world.
Having now spent more than 20 years away from Australia, and coming back and seeing, you know, that we have a plethora of arts festivals here now. I mean, everywhere you look, there's something going on. Does it? I know you've only been here for a couple of weeks, so you can't possibly have an entire overview. But do you feel that there's a different flavour here in Melbourne now?
There's an incredibly different flavour, which, of course, I can't get through participating at festivals, but I can touch the thickness of festival programs, the thickness of the comedy festival program,
which is incredible now, isn't it?
Like the thickness of the queer film festival, and there's the thickness of another festival program that name escapes me.
Well, there's Asia Topa is on.
Exactly, that's the one.
Yes,
that's the one.
Yes.
And to see that even by not participating, that those festivals exist, that they are so broad and so wide, means that there is an audience for them, which is the most fantastic thing.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. In the first place, why did you go to the Loire Valley? What drew you away from Australia, which at that time, which must have been in the late 80s, was it?
Yes, that was in that was in 87. What happened was that this was just pre-perestroika. So there was not a blink of any kind of openness, any kind of hope. Therefore, it just seemed that the Soviet Union would stay there forever. In the meantime, knowledge of Latvian culture and immersion and interest in Latvian culture amongst the diaspora community was waning, and it was getting rather weak. So a number of people, it wasn't my idea, but my partner at the time, it was his idea, that we needed to make a place where people could go to renew energy and to immerse themselves in cultural activities and celebrate the seasonal festivals, which are a very important part of Latvian culture, the solstices, Easter, Christmas, New Year's Eve. So that's why the place was created. Shortly after that, perestroika followed and things changed very quickly. But at the time, it was a deep necessity. And also, there's a small element, which was that large chateau with ballrooms and 40 bedrooms were relatively cheap in France. And ours, I think, was bought with 79 acres of land, was bought for the price of a suburban house in Boston.
Good heavens.
Yes, but the upkeep's a little bit more than that, though, isn't it?
The other thing is that you do not need to... Nobody in their right mind would have bought something that had a roof that wasn't good or foundations that weren't good, so those things were fine. But, of course, we had an army of volunteers who liked nothing better than spending the summer in the Loire Valley in France for as cleaners and cooks for the to be repaid in a dormitory bedroom.
Fantastic. And meanwhile, in the Baltic countries, there's this revolution going on, the singing revolution, which was, I think, was initially what started it. That was in Estonia, was that correct?
It sort of doesn't really matter where precisely it was, yeah. But the ethos of singing, singing as a very powerful activity, singing in very large groups in 5 yearly song festivals is a 200-year-old tradition. It is very powerful. Mm-hmm. For example, next year will be one of the annual 5 yearly festivals. There are usually 13,000 singers on stage and about 60,000 in the audience.
Wow.
So when we speak in revolution terms, singing is not only the melody and the music and the words, but it's a vibrational force field.
Mm.
Now, imagine if there are 120,000 singers in demonstrations, as there were on the embankment in Riga, and if you're a tank driver, what are you going to do when faced with 120,000 singing voices?
Mm. Becomes quite a political act.
That's the kind of dynamics that we are talking about. The other element is that while you're in the middle of this incredibly powerful singing crowd, as one person, as the one guy in Tiananmen Square who stood in front of the tank, you are among 120,000 people who are singing the same song. Mm. And
what were they singing?
They were singing folk songs. They were singing patriotic songs. They were singing songs that had encoded words in them. And so, yes, they were very powerful songs intellectually, but the act of doing it, and sometimes the act of singing, of humming together or singing a sort of a very simple song, that's where the power was.
Mm. Mm. I had that experience singing Berlioz's Requiem, which I could hardly sing, but I realized when you're in a large orchestra with a large chorus, the words just get pulled out of you.
Yes, absolutely.
It's an extraordinary physical experience of just really having to open your mouth and it all comes out.
And so feeling the harmonic through your physicality too is extraordinary. I'm so interested in the idea that these arts, because of course there were also, it was also the Writers Guild that were spearheading movements, a political movement that ultimately ended with independence being garnered in these countries. It's really extraordinary. I'm fascinated by the idea that, in a way, the artistic community was central to this movement of independence.
That is true. It took a lot of bravery from them. But then from another point of view, there were people in the political establishment, which then was the Latvian Communist Party, who were also inclined towards asking for independence, and eventually they declared that they were for an independent communist state, Latvia. However, I believe, whether it was a sort of a conspiracy or not, I believe that there was a natural coalition of the artistic communities being able to do that, whereas a political apparatchik couldn't do that even though they wanted to. So I think it was a collusion of many forces, including, very importantly, the Russian-speaking large community that was resident in Latvia at the time, who all demanded independence. It was a true coalition of many, many forces. Mm.
What does it say about the personality of those three countries, Baltic countries? I mean, would you consider that at your heart, the arts are at your heart?
It's perhaps looking at it in a different way. In all of the three Baltic states, your connection to your history in the way that it's expressed in the arts, let's say, in singing and music, has never gone away. It hasn't disappeared. It hasn't disappeared in the way that, except for Morris dancing.
That's not necessarily a bad thing.
It has in England. So it's always there. It's always palpable. And if you are an investment banker who lives in Riga, even you at midsummer will go to a country house that belongs to your friends, and you will, as a man, wear a crown of oak leaves, and you will sing those songs, and you will drink beer, and you will jump over the fire. Even if you are a completely trendy hipster, and you don't really think about it, so it's still sort of there. Walking in a deep, dark forest is something that means, it's a way that Latvians renew themselves. Seeing patterns from traditional designs, they make their way onto the sides of bobsleds when they go to world championships. They're woven into trendy scarves, and linen and hemp are used in the best of design elements for extremely chic offices. So it's something that it hasn't, it's always been there. And even though there was a break of the 50 years of Soviet rule, it's just below the surface. Mm. In the same way that certain pagan beliefs are just below the surface of Lutheran religions and Catholic religions, it seems to be amalgamated. So in a way, whilst there was nothing, as far as I'm concerned, that was good about the Soviet regime, it did preserve quite a number of things, and it preserved them because it was a way of being in opposition.
Yes, yes. So that leads me in a way then, I mentioned earlier that these days you create crowns, and they have clearly a very different meaning to ones that, to the way that we look at crowns. In Australia, we associate that with the monarchy. Immediately we see a crown, that's what we think. But that's not how they're used in Northern Europe, is it?
Well, basically what I'm doing is that I'm making, firstly, an art object, and secondly, it's an art object that may become a fashion trend. The reason why I'm doing it and why it comes easier for me and it comes easier from that place is because all around you, you have elements. So you have folk dancers who wear national costume, there are crowns. You have the aforementioned Midsummer celebration where everybody goes to the country. Men make, or women make for them, massive oak crowns. Women make for themselves flower crowns that they include plants that are very good for their health. And so what you do is that every year you sort of immerse yourself in this sort of natural bomb. So there are precursors, this bomb of smells of the earth and drippy liquid from the plants. So there is a sort of a rich background to it.
Yeah.
So I'm building on top of that. So it's natural for me to make that. The other thing is that if we want to go a little bit more esoteric and more spiritual, if we think of ritual as the time when we speak to the divine, Latvians have been making crowns out of flowers that they have never stopped from pre-Christian times to the 21st century. So I'm kind of riding on that kind of energy, connectivity, and I simply also, there's a very simple reason, and that is that I think it's a really good idea to decorate the head.
Of course. And in fact, the few times that I have met you, Brigitte, you have worn them, and I think you wear them all the time, do you not?
No.
Oh, don't you?
Just when she meets you, Sally. Huh? Just when she meets you.
Oh, I see.
But I do. I mean, it's fun, and it's if I'm making them and if I'm selling them, then I also do want to display what it looks like. Yeah. And it is quite it's quite amazing when people do come up to you and comment and give you compliments or simply say, what the hell is that?
Well, I think they're incredibly beautiful, and you have on your website a lot of different crowns, because there's clearly a crown for every occasion. And as you say, there's natural crowns or natural bombs, and there are highly jeweled ones, there are ceremonial ones. They're exquisite and they're beautiful, and I think I'd really like one myself.
We'll discuss that.
Let's lead everybody to a link. I will, of course, put a link to your website on our Facebook page, but it's www.lastroda.com. And thank you so very much for a wonderful conversation today, Brigitte Estrada. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Before you go, Brigitte, I have to ask, do you think that piano is still in the Windsor?
That's a really good question, but I think everybody should go and have a drink to find out.
Well, maybe just ring the Windsor and ask them if they have a room with a piano.
Yes.
Yeah. Since 1987, was it? Or thereabouts?
No.
That was
move.
Earlier. No, that was the 83, 84, the beginning of the Spoleto Festival.
Wow.
And the singing bicycle.
Oh, my goodness. Didn't get to the singing bicycle. Yes, that's another one of your inventions, isn't it?
The singing bicycle is invented by me and Adam Place Historical Bicycle Company. There are 12, it seats 12 singers, choir singers, because you can't have a choir with less than 12, and it's possible to sit on it and drive around.
That's on your website also?
That's also on my website.
It is too. It's fantastic. There was so much more we could talk about. It's been wonderful chatting with you, though, this morning. Thank you very much, Brigitte Estrada.
Thank you, Sally.
Bye.
Bye.
And now it's time for John Orr.
Thank you, Swanee.
Yes.
When I was in Barcelona in 1989, I went to visit...
Oh, I was there about then.
Yeah. I didn't see you there.
No, I didn't see you either.
I was there too.
Yeah. Well, actually, you were in Paris, because I'd left your place in Paris to go to Barcelona.
I didn't follow you down?
No.
Okay.
I went, as one does, to the Sagrada Familia.
Oh, yes, which looked like a bomb site in those days, didn't
it? Well, it still does.
Not so much. To me, it didn't look like a bomb site at all. It looked like a stone cathedral under construction.
Work in progress.
There were big screened-off areas with men chipping away at stone. You could hear the clatter of the stone being cut in the courtyard there. And most of the building was still under construction. There was one completed tower. And I had been told that you can go up the tower. There was a spiral staircase inside it that you could climb.
I did that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I wonder how far it goes up, and asked, and they said it goes further than you can go.
Oh.
And
them's fighting words.
Yeah, and the stairs continue at the top. And I thought, well, I know what I'll do. I'll make a little drawing and sign it and take it with me and stick it as far up the tower as I can go. And I got about two-thirds of the way up the spiral stone staircase, and there was a... you could only go one person at a time from there, and you had to take this little steel ring with you with something, some symbol hanging off it. You'd take that with you and continue up, and it got narrower and narrower and narrower until you were literally wedging your body into the stonework in order to sort of get as far up there as you could. And I had this drawing with me, so I retreated and went up with my arm extended out in front of me and got my hand around the corner. And up there was piles of paper that people had been before me and stuck their drawings or notes or whatever up there, coins even.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah. So there was a whole nest of stuff up there that was sort of left behind. Which to me was a little disappointing. I wanted my own little note to God to be there by itself, you know, but it wasn't to be.
There were some beautiful little scenes as you looked out the windows on the way up, weren't there?
Yeah, it's gorgeous, yeah. It is absolutely beautiful. And the stairs made out of the wall stone,
yes.
So that it's all cut out of the same bits of stone. But also inside buildings...
Have you finished with the Sagrada Familia?
Pretty much.
Can I just interrupt?
Absolutely.
Very, very briefly. Do you know how Guardi died?
He was hit by a tram.
Yeah, like he was up to the age of 40, he was a ladies' man and chasing every woman he could possibly find. And then he decided, when he got the commission of the Sagrada Familia, he dressed like a beggar and was living in the church for the rest of his life, which was about 34 years. And the day that he was run over by the tram, he was just looking in the middle of the street, looking at one of the towers, how it looked from the outside.
Oh, really?
Got squashed by the tram. Because he was dressed like a tramp, they took him to the poor man's hospital and he died there. Yeah. And people were saying, where's Guardi? Where's Guardi? And they found him a few days later in a poor man's hospital, dead.
Well, his cathedral continues to be built. And,
another 100 years, I think.
Well, they can take hundreds of years to build, which is quite a remarkable process. You know, none of us will see it completed.
Mm. Although the change in it since the first time that I saw it, and in fact, when I first saw it, I didn't even know I was this young, naive, you know, I had no idea. I had never heard of Gaudi or anything like that. So when I saw the cathedral, as I said, I thought it had been destroyed by bombs and had to be told the story. And so it was really a courtyard then with the two towers at either end, and I did what you did and climbed up them. But I have been back twice since, and it is so spectacular to see the evolution, even in my lifetime, of what's there. God, what a building.
Mm. Another fabulous building, of course, is the Duomo in Florence.
Yes.
Which I visited. And Brunelleschi, who did the dome, did it very cunningly. In fact, at the time it was the biggest dome anywhere, and it was built without scaffolding because they just couldn't figure out where they would get the lumber to build scaffolding. And he designed a method of building the dome without having to have it supported from underneath, which essentially meant that he used these massive stone ribs that made a dome shape and then laid bricks that locked into each other inside the cavities left by the ribs and the runners, the circles that run around the ribs. And then put a skin on the outside of it, leaving a cavity between the inside of the dome and the skin on the outside. And in that skin is a staircase which leads up to the top of the dome and is at various...
Filled with paper also? Or?
Well, it's cut through, as you know. I think you've no doubt been up there,
yes,
mate.
Yeah. But magnificent.
And cut through the ribs on the way up, and
but there's no one putting.
But there's graffiti in there. And most of the graffiti in there is people writing their names and then writing the name of the person they're in love with next to their name. You know, so it's all very sweet. But it was kind of, to me, massively exciting to be in there and lean at that weird staircase, which is out of the perpendicular and. Having to lean on Brunelleschi's bricks in certain parts and make your way up there, it was absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, because he made plans and then burnt them afterwards, so nobody would know how he did it.
Right. Well, that was a very secretive building.
Yeah, he's a smart guy.
Beautiful buildings, both of them. We're going to have to move on, I have to say.
Oh, really? I didn't even get to painting.
I know. Well...
You can butt in when I'm talking.
I'll butt in when you're talking.
Right, but I have to play something for you first, Mark, don't I?
Yep.
There we are, Mark.
Thanks, Sally. That's great. So I'm going to talk about birth and death today. Now, today there are 360,000 people born worldwide, well, there will be, and 151,600 die each day. That's about 15,000 an hour, 6,000 deaths an hour, which comes down to 4 births a second and 2 deaths a second.
Gosh.
So we're increasing the number.
We're increasing, yeah. We're about half around.
So we're spreading the mould.
And while we're sitting here, about 15,000 people will be born and 6,000 will die.
Right.
So it's not bad. Now, this is all in relation to the life of Brian, my father, who was one of those people who died in February. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about him and his death. So my father saw his oncologist last October and was told he had lymphoma and melanoma cancer and probably had about 6 months to live or die. What they say is, if your time hasn't come, not even your doctor can kill you. My mother, Barbara, called it his use-by date and asked if he preferred such apparent precision. He said, yes, I'd rather know than live in indefinite hope. On January the 18th this year, his doctor told him there was nothing more he could do, and now it was a matter of weeks. That evening, we had dinner, Barbara and Brian, Kagi, my lover, and her father, David, at the Deck in South Bank, overlooking the Yarra. Very good restaurant, John. If you ever go...
What's great it called? View,
the Deck.
Oh, yes.
Overlooking the Yarra in Melbourne. Very good food, lovely service. Anyway, Brian was... That's a bit of product placement. Brian was smiling, relaxed and prepared. We asked him would he prefer to die at home or hospital. He replied, home, which he did. We also asked him would he prefer to be buried or cremated. He said, I don't care, I won't be here. The evening before he died, I told him I was impressed by his dying and that I loved him and hopefully I would see him the next day. But if not, c'est la vie. He said, thanks, then asked me for a sharp knife just in case. He died the next morning with dignity, fortitude and humour. Not once complaining. There were no sharp knives involved. He was at home in bed with his wife and dog Cricket beside him, his daughter Linda in the room next door. They all heard him breathing deeply and with what they described as a lovely rhythm until he stopped and moved on at around 6 a.m. as the magpies he loved were trilling up the sun. Apparently it's called the death hour. It's when most people...
Oh, I've heard that, yes.
I would like to say, if any of you are planning on dying soon or later, if possible, do it at home. It's so much more human and such an inspiration to those you leave behind.
That's wonderful. Mm. I think it's a very pertinent story. I think we need to be having more of these discussions, actually, about death.
Yes.
And about enabling.
And home death.
Home death and enabling.
And people. Home birth as well. I think it's something which is quite important people don't really speak about. The fact that we hide our arrival and our departure from you in hospitals, but mostly through fear. I mean, it is messy. It is messy, but it's very human. But, you know, to have the people there and you're in your house then, rather than having to go and park and get into a hospital, it's not really...
Richard Dawkins rather neatly connected the two things, birth and death, by suggesting that anyone who was unsure about what might happen to them after they're dead should just think of what was happening before they were born.
Arts About Statesman, theatre critic, actor, blogger and soothsayer Cliff Ellen joins us for his incomparable view from the cliff this morning. Good morning, Cliff.
Good morning, Sally. Good morning, John. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Cliff.
Do you think I should do a voice warm-up before I come up?
No.
I used to do it on stage, but you come in here cold and you know.
And this is a cold studio. They've bumped us this week into the cold studio.
I've been listening to jazz. I can't stand jazz. Why does anybody... The
I'm
only people
jazz.
Who like jazz are the musicians.
Jazz is a broad church.
I listen to it for half an hour.
Try Miles Davis, Cliff. Oh. Miles Davis does some pretty amazing jazz. I know what you mean, but there is some jazz music which is really good.
I get a feeling people say they like jazz because it sounds good.
Well, isn't that what it's supposed to do?
No.
What they're saying, it sounds good to say they like jazz.
Yeah, so...
I don't know.
I'm a bit depressed anyway.
Are you?
I mean, they've got an Elvis night at the Rosebud Country Club.
Yeah.
Which will attract hundreds. Yet all we get is the likes of Pauline asking, you know, why are we putting up with the ABC? Let's get rid of the ABC. Let's get rid of SBS. And it's very frustrating.
Well, it is. It's extremely frustrating to see how lowbrow can actually go.
Yeah, well, we've also got an opposition leader in Bill Shorten whose arts knowledge, extends to a school production of Grease, if we're lucky. He'd be really stretching it to go into town to see a musical, for that matter.
But at least his party is backing arts as a central kind of tenet to community.
I forgot Sally's in the arts party.
She's also in politics.
Yes,
the leader of her own political party.
I love the
almost.
Arts party. I really do.
Well, all right.
Nice. Well, cabaret's coming onto the ass now. I've talked about cabaret before.
Yes,
opens April 27th. Check it. I think it's on comethethecabaret.com.au. But when is it on? Well, it's hard to say because my eyes are going really bad now.
I think you did mention it. Who's in it?
No idea.
It's really good. Paul somebody. Capsis?
Capsis. Paul Capsis. Yes, that's right.
Gee, the memory's playing up. Regent Theatre, May the 12th. My Fair Lady. a Leno and Lowe musical based on, Pygmalion, is it? Experts? I talked to these two, they're experts.
They're experts, that's right.
Reds Livermore, Robin Nevin. That's rather good. They wouldn't be the leads, but they're two really good stage actors, you know. And it's also Charles Edwards and Anna O'Byrne, directed by Julie Andrews herself. That got really good reviews in Sydney, so which is quite good. I suppose it'd be nice to be directed by Julie Andrews. I don't know.
I don't know either.
I've only struck two good directors in about 40. So.
Yeah, who are they?
I'm not naming them.
Oh, no, that would be career suicide, of course, wouldn't it?
Well, I've already said somewhere in my blog, you know, my disastrous theatrical career was ruined by incompetent directors. Yeah. But that's another story altogether.
That is another story, yeah.
Three Little Words at South Bank, the 18th of April to the 27th of May. Playwright Joanna Murray-Smith. Well, we all know her. She's very good.
Yes, she is extremely good.
Comedy.
She's a local woman as well. She grew up here.
Yeah, and Catherine McClements is in it. Well, they call her now beloved Catherine McClements.
I don't know why they use the adjective
beloved. Is that an adjective, beloved? Keep them on their toes.
Case,
I keep
I
them
don't
on
think
their
my
toes.
Microphone's on.
Oh, I see.
Really?
Three Little Words is directed by Sarah Goods, and we all know how good she is.
Yes.
Yeah, she's marvellous. There's a couple of shows coming on, La Mama.
Yes.
In the Men's. Now, that's been on before. That's been overseas too, in America and England. It's an award-winning play by Melbourne playwright Kieran Carroll. And it's coming back. When's it coming back?
Oh, now
19th of April to the 30th of April.
What's that called?
In the Men's.
Ah, because he wrote a play that was on here at the Frankston Arts Centre quite recently. And in fact, we had him on the show. I talked to him and it was about domestic violence and child abuse.
Yeah. Mm.
And it was a really powerful piece of writing.
He's very clever.
Mm.
Did you go and see Carol's play?
Yeah. Oh, Carol's play? Absolutely. Of course I did. My daughter was in it.
It was on last night.
Yes, it was. It was on the last couple of nights.
Yes. I'll
Stories in the
it
Dark.
Next week.
And that would be great if you'd do that. And of course we had Carol on last week talking about it. Stories in the Dark.
Yes,
on
just
the
you and Mark. Where was John?
He was AWOL.
Another one of those.
Today
holidays.
Brody's AWOL. Last week it was John.
Oh, it's down on
I'm gonna go AWOL.
Bruny then. Island, Cliff.
Oh, is that where is that?
Bruny Island's off the coast of Tassie.
Right.
Not very far, just the Don Tricasso Channel between Tassie and Bruny Island.
Did you catch one of those little planes?
No, there's a fair car ferry across.
Oh. Well,
lots of oysters and crayfish and that kind of thing.
It's a beautiful part
great,
of the world.
But I don't go past Mornington. Friday Night Vaudeville, what is this? Vaudeville, you know, what's it mean?
Vaudeville.
Short acts. Lots of them, every Friday night. Speakeasy headquarters. Australia's only vaudeville theatre presents a themed lineup of comedy and burlesque.
And burlesque, I suppose that defines it. I also think boom, boom, you know, when somebody says a joke, boom, boom. That's why I don't know whether that's...
How's your father?
The Apollo Theatre at 522 Flinders Street. I wonder, burlesque, that'd be quite nice. Well, is it just bodies, is it females?
Oh, well,
sexy.
I think it's erotica and
I try to stay away from the sexy stuff.
Do you?
Well, I've passed it, as we all know. Depending if there's any ladies out there. the Gold Logie nominees, thus more depression is coming up.
Yes.
I've got to read out the nominees. I don't know all of them, but Waleed Ali's there and Peter Hellier, both from the project. And Jessica Marais, M-A-R-A-I-S,
yes,
I don't know
Marais,
how to pronounce
yes.
that. A celebration of Australian television. I think not. I mean, you've got to be kidding, don't you? And then
so you
I
won't be watching then,
couple
Cliff?
Of, well, I'll watch a little bit of telly. Mark doesn't watch television. I can talk what I like about television. I
don't have one to watch.
Well, they're very formulaic of late. There's two television shows on at the moment. One is Broadchurch, of course, on the ABC, which is fairly good, and the other one
it's
is...
It's a third series, is it?
It is, and there'll be a fourth. I find They'll find out the first murderer wasn't a real murderer and they'll bring him back, something like that.
Yeah, probably.
Formulaic, in inverted commas. And the other one is The Missing on BBC First. And I've noticed this, and with The Bridge, both the American and the Swedish version, that they always have these females in the lead. They're good females, they're fine actors, but they're erratic. They all do stupid things. And I sit there on my own, like, you know, a little 81-year-old, shriveled up old fellow, screaming at the television, you know, because they do such silly things. Has any of you seen Broadchurch, John?
No.
I saw the first series, which I really liked. Actually, I think
said
I might
Broadchurch
have seen the second
before, but I haven't seen the TV show.
Yeah.
Aren't the women annoying? I mean, they're good.
Yeah.
But they have this formula. The lead women have to do stupid things.
Yes, I'm watching Spiral, the French one. Same thing, the lead female. She's just I'm probably not allowed to say that. I'll have to beep that out.
I'm walking out
all
the
time.
Straight away.
Which series is it?
Spiral, or how would you say it in French? Would it Spiral? Yes, that's what I thought. Hey, we're running out of time.
I know.
What are you going to do this afternoon, Cliff?
I can tell. I'm going to practice seeing because my eyes are... getting bad.
That's
are
what they? I've been doing all my life, practicing seeing.
I'm really sorry. We can't even play you a song, so I'm going to hold it over for next week. Is that all right?
Oh, that lovely song I sent you.
Yeah, Crucify Your Mind by Rodriguez. Yeah, I'll send it. We'll play it next week. Or I might play it at the very, very end.
I asked somebody in the smoking section of the RSL what's a good song, and they told me that one. So
the RSL has a smoking section?
Dedicated smoking section. Yes, that's
wonderful. Listen, everybody.
Multicultural dedicated.
It's time for the news, all right? So Cliff's going to have to stay here for the news.
I can hear the typewriter.
Yes, very good. And Mark hasn't even got a list for the news, but I'm going to read the very first one, which is Whistlewood. They've got an Easter Autumn Salon coming up, 14th to the 17th at their fabulous gallery in Tux Road in Main Ridge. Have a look at it. Have a look at their website. Top Arts has opened also this week, March the 24th, at the Ian Potter Centre. It's providing a platform for 57 students drawn from over 2,600 submissions from across the government, Catholic and independent schools to present their thoughts on contemporary issues. Always worth a look, so go and have a look at that.
Hatch is the new incubating initiative. It's running at FAC, FARC, the Frankston Arts Centre.
How do you pronounce that, John?
Fuck.
Mark Schaller and Mick Turner have an exhibition opening at Sagra Gallery in Glenferrie Road on the 5th of April.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, plein air paintings of Phillip Island, which are most certainly worth having a look at if you happen to be nearby. I think it's on until the end of April.
Texter Queen, who I said Schmexter Queen and then changed my mind back to Texter Queen.
Yep.
At the MPRG. She's okay.
She's okay.
Yeah.
Very, like a little bit too political for my liking.
That's
artist
right.
Artist registrations are open at Fringe until April the 10th for any of you out there wanting to participate.
Yeah, that's right. That's good. So have a look.
Participate in what?
In being in the Fringe.
Okay.
Performance art. Bill Henson by Bill Henson, a festival of photography at the NGV. Images selected by the artist encompassing themes and portraits, nudes, lush museum interiors and transcendent landscapes. Created between 2008 and 2011, continuing Henson's sensitive, sophisticated study of the human condition.
Well, Bill Henson is a major Australian artist.
It's on until the 27th of August. You better go see that. Look, if you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About, but you can catch up with the show via podcast, which should appear on the station website sometime in the future.
I'm glad I stayed. This has been quite exciting.
I'm so glad.
I don't believe photography is an art. Sorry.
The show's on air and streaming Wednesdays
Nor
at 12 as well. You can find a link to our Facebook page. Yeah.
But I really do like Bill Henson.
Everybody seems to love him. I've never heard of him, actually.
It's a bastard.
I'll go.
Join us again next Sunday. I've completely lost my train of thought. Thanks for joining us this week. Remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art.
But we know what we like about art, Mark.
Yes, whether it's art is another question, John.
Yes,
thanks, Cliff.
Like Tracy Moffat.
Pleasure.
Tracy Moffat's good.
I love my fart.
Yeah.
Okay.